If our attention spans are truly so short, we want to be doing something while we're doing something else, right? It's why you're probably listening to this podcast while you're at the gym or washing your dishes. We want content that is acting as this sort of companion to like while we're doing other things in our life.
Nikki, welcome to the show. How are you?
I'm doing wonderful. How are you? Thank you for having me.
Of course, it's all good. You know, it's I was telling you, it's very cold in New York. It's that time of the year. It's miserable time of the year, like, you know. So it's every year I'm like, I don't know if I'm ready for that. But then, you know, I'm okay. But you are in LA, right?
Yeah, sunny, warm, 70 all year. That's when I move. Okay. That's what we pay for.
Stop it there, please. Thank you. Enough. I cannot take it today with all this terrible weather. So I'm very, very happy. I love going sometimes to LA for that. Tell us a bit more about yourself. Usually I ask these to every guest using the map that is called the mission, the achievements, and the purpose.
My name's Nikki. I am a creator. I've been doing this for a little over 2 years now, but I moved to LA 3 years ago. I used to work for BuzzFeed, actually. I was a social strategist there. It was like my first job out of college, and I worked in their entertainment vertical. So anything that touched like movies, entertainment content, any of the celebrity content, anything like that. And they brought me on to be, I honestly think this is like right when TikTok started. I graduated in the pandemic. So I think that they were just like, we need a Gen Z kid to like figure this out. So that's what I did there. And then after a year of like, I was working on like the organic brand or like brand management, that type of side, I switched into their like influencer marketing side. So like they're a media company, so it's not like an agency, so it doesn't fully work the same way. It was great, but also I always knew that I wasn't going to be there forever. And that was never my goal. I've always wanted to be an entrepreneur. So that's when I started posting. And after about 2 years of doing that, I finally like started gain some traction with it, and I quit my job 6 months ago. So I make videos about like the creator economy, marketing, music, and movies. Honestly, I'd say we're like my four corners of kind of what I do. So going back to like what you said about mission and purpose too, like I think a big reason I started this was I really felt like my college experience in terms of anything in regards to like the creator economy or like what social media and marketing actually looks like was so not reflective of like what I actually did in the real world. That always bothered me. So I really like got inspired to make educational content. Like pretty much everything I make is educational in some way. And I'm really, really passionate about finding ways to make education on the internet free. Because I think that people don't realize that like this is a career path. Like I started doing this. I started posting with the intention to do this as a full-time job. And like, did it take me 2 years? Yeah, but I'm doing it now and it's been great. And I'm a lot more successful at this than I ever was at any of my corporate jobs. You know, I think everybody thinks that like virality is fully luck-based. And I could not disagree more with that. And I really just like want to, you know, empower college students and marketers and creatives and stuff to really like pursue their dreams. Any notable like achievements, I would say quitting my job was definitely a big one. And everything after that has been amazing. I started my own podcast with my friend Coco Moco. Like we had our first like 10 million view month on YouTube, and also like starting to really gain some partnerships with brands that I really like love and admire and have enjoyed to work with. So like Microsoft and Canva, I got to work with TikTok and Instagram last year. I did my first ever speaking engagement with Meta last year, which was cool. It's like a 6-part series. So I think like that has really been, you know, like starting to feel that like creator business plant its roots, so to speak, has been really, really cool. And I'm very excited for the rest of the year.
That's amazing. Congrats, first of all, you know, this it's a big change, right? But you already getting all these brand deals and, you know, speaking opportunities. So going from BuzzFeed, right? So, you know, you were an employee there, working on, you said, different type of like, you know, industries and verticals. When you became a full-time creator, what was like that type of change? Were there any type of things that you were not expecting or you didn't think of as you started something that... Again, you were like, oh, wow, we didn't think about this, like a couple of things that people usually don't tell you when you want to become a full-time creator.
Oh, a lot. There's a lot of weird stuff. Okay. Like, I mean, I think like the first big hurdle was like becoming incorporating yourself and all the stuff that goes with that of like, at the end of the day, if you're a creator, like you are an entrepreneur. You know what I mean? Like there's Nikki Reardon LLC out there. There's the podcast has its own S Corp, like, you know, like taxes, like that type of stuff is, and I'm still learning it, honestly. Like, I don't think I fully know. And a big part of that is also like finding people you trust to delegate that to. So I think that was a big part of it. And also weirdly, I think I had at the beginning, especially like a very big loss of identity. Like, I think I'm just the type of person who really values, feedback and structure. It's weird to do something and, you know, like nobody gives you good job or like, hey, you did a great presentation, or like that just is completely removed. And it might sound weird and it's like a very, you know, first world problem to have, but it is like sometimes, you know, weird if you work at something for like 8 hours a day to have no team, to have no person there. Like it is sometimes like a weird empty feeling. I think that was a big thing for me to adjust to. I don't know. It's been a journey for sure.
Much to learn.
It's crazy.
And even like between taxes and laws, yeah, they are so far behind, right? Compared to what is the creator economy.
Yeah.
I can just imagine the challenges there.
You know, like IRS website is not fun.
Yeah, I know. It's definitely not in line with what is happening in 2024. But let's start from the content, right? Because it's what a content creator does, right? So it's creating content, could be entertainment, could be informational, and so on. And I noticed some of yours like are very interesting. And there's one about what you call the FaceTime content, or like companionship content, right? So that could be the future of the creator economy. Tell us a bit more. What do you mean by FaceTime content?
Sure. So I kind of quantify FaceTime content as this term of like, it's the idea that like if our attention spans are getting shorter and shorter as humans, which we all have known, you know, like data proves it, that people have really said like, oh, I think that that's why short form, that's why TikTok, that's why this 15 second content was so popular. And I think we're kind of starting to see the pendulum swing back a little bit in the idea that like, if our attention spans are truly so short, we want to be doing something while we're doing something else, right? It's why you're probably listening to this podcast while you're at the gym or washing your dishes. It's maybe why you turn on a YouTube video while you're eating dinner. It's why you read somebody's newsletter while you're in your 9 a.m. meeting at work. You know what I mean? It's, I think, this idea that like we want content that is acting as this sort of companion to like while we're doing other things in our life. And I really think creators who have been good at leaning into that have this longevity because they don't have to compete for other people's attention 100% of the time in the same way, right? Like they can be there with you on your drive to work. They can be there with you at the gym, like whatever way that is. And I think that people are really, I also think like long form in general is just like getting a nice little resurgence this year. And I really see like specifically content that's geared towards this companionship factor is what's going to be huge.
It's very interesting because, you know, I'm a millennial, right? So anytime that I look at things like, you know, from Gen Z and Gen Alpha, especially now, for me, it's crazy to think that a lot of Gen Alpha, they are playing a video game while in a part of the screen, there is something else going on. Could be like a YouTube video. And next to it, there could be a Twitcher, you know, doing like a live streaming. And that to me, it's like,
yeah,
what is happening, right? So what do you think are going to be the next generation type of either formats or style of video? So in addition to the one that you just said, the FaceTime, are you seeing anything else happening in terms of multi-screen and multiple things happening at the same time?
I think it depends. I think the platforms are kind of going in opposite directions, which is interesting. Like I've been noticing, I think YouTube is like, we saw this like Mr. Beastification of the platform where it was like $500,000 in every video and the edits and like, every year, it's like, whoa, like you watch the video for 10 seconds, and you're like, okay, like, and I think that he was so good at that, that then we saw this wave of like the Mr. Beast clones, like all these creators just doing these like challenge style content like that. And I think it's become really, really stale. Like, I think that audience is like, it's a really, really popular format for young, like children. But I think like most like Gen Z, younger millennials, like we're just kind of like, I don't really like that. And so I think YouTube's getting a little bit more casual. Like I've seen a lot of creators like blow up for these very unedited podcasts for, there's this guy who I was like reading an article about who's gained like a million subs in under 6 months. And he is like a fitness creator and he just posts daily vlogs and does not edit his videos at all. Like it's just him in the gym every day. And I'm like, see, like that's the type of stuff I think. Yeah. And that's that companionship thing, right? It's like, you go to the gym, I go to the gym, let's do that together. And I think people love that. It's this, it's again, like going back to what was social media founded for. It was social networking, right? It's this idea of connecting with a person. But then on TikTok, on short form, I think it's weirdly like starting to get a bit more highly edited and a bit more produced. And I think a lot of the creators who are seeing success, I think of like a Monet McMichael, like she is a lifestyle vlogger. None of the makeup content, fashion content. We've seen it before. We've seen it for years, but she really had this breakthrough in like being one of the first people to really edit on TikTok in the way that like 2017, like Emma Chamberlain would edit a vlog. You know what I mean? And I think it's it's not necessarily about if there's a right or wrong. I think it's all, it's interesting that it's in both instances, it's what's going against the grain, like going against what's popular. So like TikTok was really popular for no editing. Now people are blowing up for editing. YouTube was really popular for editing. Now people are blowing up for not editing, which is interesting. You know, like I always think media swings like a pendulum, trends swing like a pendulum. And it's interesting to like identify that when it's happening. And like how you can tap in as like a brand or a marketer or whatever to jump onto that.
Is your brand ready to amplify its reach? Well, the Influencer Marketing Factory is here for you. We are a global influencer marketing agency helping brands ignite their growth. From influencer identification to campaign strategy, handling legalities and agreements, to managing shipping and logistics, we got you all covered. We work with hundreds of brands across different verticals, from Fortune 500 companies to direct-to-consumer brands. And we don't just stop there. With detailed ROI analysis, we help brands like yours measure success transforming impressions into conversions. You can find us at theinfluencermarketingfactory.com or just searching The Influencer Marketing Factory on Google.
It's very interesting what you say, because it reminds me of a long time ago. I don't remember who was that on YouTube a couple of years ago already. It was like that. You said that sometimes when you create content, this was especially during the boom of new algorithms, right? It was saying this guy that sometimes content creators, they don't make anymore what they like, but what is popular, right? And so you get into the wheel, right, of recreating exactly what you said, like this Mr. Beast identity, whatever you said before.
The beastification, is what I call it.
You know what I mean with that? And you know, that is actually what happens, right? So sometimes you don't make that anymore. And I do agree, like now we're going to, there is always someone in this cycle that has to break it, right? And disrupt it and be like, we change, like, you know, completely the route because we want to, again, you know, get more, you know, like authentic. I know this is overused as a word, but definitely more on the competitive type of content. And I also wanted to ask you something. So on top of it, right? So this is the content side, but then something else also that you said in your videos, right? You expressed like this importance also of building passive revenue stream, or at least, you know, multiple revenue stream in addition to the brand deal.
Yeah.
Tell me a bit more, like, how do you, first of all, how do you approach these? So you said before about brand deals, but I would like to understand a bit more also if you have other revenue stream. And also, like, how would you advise, you know, other creators when it comes to, again, maximize the revenue stream to minimize the risk of maybe not making a month because they didn't close a brand deal?
I think passive revenue streams are having, like, a growing thing every year for years in the creator economy, but I think we're really starting it to culminate to like even larger scale businesses in some instances. You know, you think of like a Prime or like a Chamberlain Coffee, and there's even much smaller scales of that. But going back to like this FaceTime content, like there's this one guy I follow who this companionship content, he is a TikToker, but every single morning at 9 a.m. he does a live stream scheduled every single day where he wakes up and all he does is make videos about coffee. And he wakes up, he makes his morning coffee with the audience. They all drink it together. It's a 30-minute live. They chit-chat. That's it. And then everybody starts their day. And he has now a coffee bean line. And it's a genius, right? Like, talk about perfect product market fit. Talk about having the target audience. Talk about having an organic way to push the products. Like, I think we're going to see more stuff like that. I think, you know, and it's going to depend on the creator too. Like, I make $0.00 from affiliate revenue, but there's some fashion girlies out there who are killing it, right? Because like, what I do is not really tied to a product. It's tied to like a concept or music or marketing. So my more passive revenue streams have been one, TikTok created the beta program, which is something they started. It's like the start of passive revenue. Also YouTube passive revenue. I do consulting. So like, that's something I've done. I guess it's like not kind of passive. I don't know. I guess in my mind, I count anything that's not brand deals passive to me. But I do consulting for creators and music labels and agencies, like working with their creators, because that's what I used to do full time, and working with their campaigns, or sometimes like how they're pitching to a client and stuff like that, because I feel like they have seen value in me as like this bridge between somebody who knows what the annoying marketing, you know, making a deck about impressions and reach and all that stuff, but also somebody who's like very integrated into this creative side of the industry, like what's happening now, what's happening with trends, and doing that.
And since you said like, you know, verticals, so let's talk about that. Most people have been like niche. You did another video about like the top five monetizable niches for creators. Which are they? Let's talk about like maybe anything between 2023, just finish it, and what do you see happening in 2024?
Sure. So like the top five in my mind are like finance, tech, food, parenting, which is a different ethical conversation. And last is home decor. Those are like the really the five that I've been seeing like blow up. And also those creators are like ringing it in from my experience. And I think like people, you know, people always think of like fashion and beauty. I think that's what you think. Like if you close your eyes and think influencer, that's probably what you're thinking about. But we're seeing time and time again, like as this industry evolves, these brands realize the ROI of influencer marketing. Like you know what I mean? Like 3 years ago, Chase Bank wasn't doing influencer marketing campaigns, but Chase Bank was a client of BuzzFeed when I worked there. So like, it's interesting to see how these things change. And I think also these sorts of businesses like finance and tech and like, they're so hard to make good organic content about. Like, I don't know how somebody can get 100,000 views talking about like the processing speed of their laptop. Like, I could not do that. Like, that is not my world. But there's people out there who can. And like, to tech, like a product, like a laptop, you know what I mean? Like, that's so valuable. I think those, like, we're seeing a lot more creators blow up in things that like, aren't the fanciest, coolest, you know what I mean? Like a fashion girly, like not everybody has to be like an it girl, but like somebody I worked with was like, makes content about like finance and how people can achieve financial freedom. I'm like, that is awesome. Like, good for you. And she has a huge partnership with like SoFi and all these like finance brands. So that's kind of like what I think is like the industry is moving towards.
I can see that in another episode I had your Rich BFF on the podcast.
That's what I'm talking about. That's exactly right. She used to work at BuzzFeed too. Fun fact. We literally worked there together.
Well, so yeah, I had her a few episodes ago, and it was exactly fascinating. Like something that is correctly said, it's not the typical, you know, vertical, there is no fashion, it's no beauty. And that was, for me, was fascinating to see how she was able to like tell stories behind something that can be sometimes very complicated, but very important for the future. And when I posted it on my Instagram, like a lot of friends of mine are like, oh my God, I love her, I follow her. And I didn't realize that many people, they are not into finance, follow her because of that. So yeah, it was,
it was great to see. Totally. I love what you said too. It's like this, the skill set of making complicated topics simple is super valuable and super underrated. Like, again, like talking about your processing chip or whatever, like, you know, like that's not something I know, but I'm going to think about, but it's something I want an expert opinion on. And I think we're going to see the more of these like experts, even like not just like an it girl skincare girly, but like somebody who's literally a dermatologist picking up her iPhone and starting to make videos about skincare. Like, that's so cool to me. You know what I mean? Like, and we're seeing more of this, like, expert opinion is something that I think is really growing too.
Yeah. It's something, you're totally right. So in addition to these categories, I also think, like, you know, the, like, professionals that before had, I don't want to say there was, like, a gap between them and the audience, but, you know, they were maybe just seeing patients, let's say, in their, you know, studio, whatever, but now they really can go out there and people are learning.
Yeah.
And it was, you know, a question between, like, who is, I know that now on YouTube, there is, I think, like, this doctor is licensed, right? Or something like that. They do have a label. I was thinking, right? Because there have been, you know, occasions where not everyone was, let's say, licensed.
I know.
A lot of cases, you know? So, but tell me just, you know, I have a last question for you, and then please feel free to add anything that I didn't ask you today. What are the things that you would like to see in the influencer marketing industry happening in the next, I don't know, like 12 months, 24 months.
I think brands need to get better at doing less transactional business and more long-term partnerships with creators. Like, I think that a big disconnect in the industry, and like even when I was working, is like, it is literally a skill, a muscle to learn how to talk about a brand well, or like certain things of the brand. And there are brands who I've worked with 2, 3, 4 times, and every single time, the performance of the content has improved because I'm learning what my audience likes. I'm like the same way you test your organic content, right? Like when you're doing something with a brand, like I will literally learn like, oh, they really, I said that one line and there was 6 comments about it. I did not think I was that was that interesting. Let me make my entire next video about specifically that topic. Like there is so much value to like working like really consistently with somebody. I think too, for me, my favorite partnership I worked on last year was Canva, like the slide deck making thing. Cause when they emailed me, I sent them a screenshot that I had been a subscribed member since 2016. I was like, I can talk about this product. Like I have used it. Yeah. I worked in marketing. Now I make videos about music. Like in my personal consulting business, I'm using it all the time. And we did like a three video thing. And the first video did the worst. The second video did the second best. And the third video did far and away the best. And that was like such a concrete example to me of like, I literally had a contact with this person where we were talking, we were working, we were learning, we were testing. And by the end, they saw like significant increase in performance. And if they're always, you know, I think like a lot of the clients I would work with were like, let's just work with someone different this time. You know, like there's just this desire to work with somebody new. But I think when you have somebody that you think is really, really talented or has like a specific angle on your business or your product or a use case, like whatever that is really invest in that person. And like, you will see not just the same performance, but I think growing performance over time.
And also like, if you only see one time, one advertisement of something, even if it is organic, it can bounce back from your head, right? How many do we see every day? But yeah. You see the same person very passionate about that and talking about, you know, specific thing for 3, 4, 5 times, then maybe the fifth time I will be very convinced. And even if I'm not yet, I'm curious, yep. Right? Because it's the fifth time that Nikki tells me about Canva, right? So let me really check it out about this new feature. If you only talk about that once, it might work, but you know what I mean?
Exactly. Exactly. And then also there's the chance that a competitor swoops in and then it's going to look like they didn't really care about it the first time. But if they've talked about you 5 times and a competitor once, everybody knows who they really like value. You know what I mean?
Nikki, thank you so much for joining me today. This was amazing.
Thank you for having me. It was such a pleasure to talk with you.
This was The Influence Factor by The Influencer Marketing Factory, and I'll see you next week.